isolated because the behaviours of their partner are deliberately isolating them from their friends and family as a form of control. Domestic violence can happen in any number of ways. Where is God in domestic violence? In the situation that we saw, where was God? In the people and the lives that we saw, where was God? In the situations and the circumstances, where was God? It can be really easy to watch something like that and to decide who the good is, who the bad is, and shut it off. It can be really easy to demonise one person and go, they're evil. They need to be dealt with. But is it really that simple? Is it really that straightforward? To be clear, and I want to say this up front, in no circumstances should domestic violence be tolerated. Domestic violence is wrong. And in a society where there is gender inequality that helps domestic violence continue, there is a problem that needs to get dealt with. And it's only when we start dealing with the issue of gender inequality that we will properly start dealing with domestic violence. But it's not quite so easy as that, is it? If it was, it would have been sorted by now. If fixing domestic violence was simply telling someone that they were behaving badly and to change their ways, surely by now we would have dealt with domestic violence if that's all it took. Life is more complicated than that. Each of us, during our life, will find ourselves in situations where we have to make difficult decisions. Not necessarily domestic violence situations, life situations. If you get to go the whole way through life and you don't have to make a difficult situation, you have a blessed life. Life is not straightforward. The parable that Drew read for us is not straightforward. It is not an easy parable. Commentators refer to it as the most difficult parable. They refer to it sometimes as one of the most difficult passages in the Bible. Sometimes they try to soften it, make it a little bit more palatable so it doesn't, it's a little bit, you know, too difficult or confronting, by saying that the rich owner had been overcharging the people. And so actually the manager was doing the right thing and he was fixing it because the rich man was being greedy and mad, you know, and so by reducing what was owed, he was actually acting justly and he was showing care and compassion to the people whose wheat he was reducing to 800 and whose oil he was reducing to 450. I don't think that's the point. I really don't think that's what it was about. For me, it's because of the difficulties that are in this parable that I like it so much. It's because of the difficulties in this parable that it actually is a parable that you can relate to. So just to recap, you have an owner or a rich man who's a long way away and he's appointed a manager to look after his property. He gets wind of the fact that the manager isn't behaving quite as well as he should, and he fires him. The manager goes, oh my goodness, what now? I need to find some way to survive. And so he does what he feels is he can only do, so that he gets favour with people for once he's been dismissed. And then, in a surprising twist, the rich man comes back and commends him for what he's done. How does that work? Life isn't easy or straightforward. But in looking at this parable, we see possibilities for real life. Before we look too closely at that, let's step back and look at the broader context. This parable comes at the end of a number of parables, which culminates with the parable of all parables, the prodigal son. And if you look at these parables, you see a process that happens. Something's lost, something goes away, it's in the wilderness for a while, it's found, everyone's happy. They're like Disney parables. It stops just at the point that everyone's really happy because it's all happened. They've all lived happily ever after. And those parables are great to preach on because I can stand here and I can say to you, just like the prodigal son, when you return home to the arms of your loving father, you will be embraced and everything will be fine. But is that actually life? Is that actually how it happens in real life? This parable doesn't work like that. In this parable, the manager is sent away because he's done wrong. He doesn't then come to his senses, realise what he's done wrong, come back to the manager, confess his ways and be embraced by the owner and say, "Yes, you are forgiven. Please come back." That doesn't happen. The manager is fired. The manager stays fired. At no point does he get his job back. He's done wrong. There are consequences. End of. And so the manager, in this moment in time, sits there and goes, "Okay, what next? I need to survive. I can't dig. I'm not going to beg. What can I do?" And so in that situation, he makes the decision, which is the best of a bad situation. It's at this point that we want him to go, "Oh no, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to confess and beg for mercy from the owner and he's going to take me back and give me my job back." We really want that to happen, but it doesn't. Life isn't easy. The real world isn't necessarily easy. In the real world, the prodigal son might come home, but might steal money from his family to pay for a drug habit and then leave in the dead of the night. In the real world, the lost sheep that he's found may be found, but because of the drought, is dead. In the real world, when the lost coin is found, the stock market might have crashed. And so what that money is worth now is nothing compared to what it was before it was lost. In the real world, one woman a week, and one man a month is killed as a result of domestic violence at the hands of her current or previous partner. In the real world, one in four women have either experienced or are experiencing domestic violence at the hands of their partner. And if you think that doesn't happen in church, you are mistaken. Domestic violence is in all spheres of life. one in four. That means that in real life, all of you know women who are currently experiencing or have experienced domestic violence at the hands of their partner. That means that in this room now, there is quite likely people who have experienced or are experiencing domestic abuse at the hands of their partner. Where is God? Where is God in that? Life isn't easy or straightforward. This parable shows the other side of existence. It's the non-Disney life. But even though this parable isn't the traditional happily ever after story, the actions of those involved show hospitality. They show grace. They show compassion. They show forgiveness. It's really easy to show grace and forgiveness when you gain from it. It's really easy to show compassion in a dewy-eyed moment where everyone's in love. It's really easy to show forgiveness when you gain something from it. In the other parables, in the prodigal son, in the lost coin, in the lost sheep, forgiveness and joy come after the moment where it's resolved. Forgiveness and joy come after they've benefited, they've found the coin, they've found the sheep, the son's come back. It doesn't happen in the middle, it happens at the end. When the owner comes back and discovers, when the manager comes back and discovers that the owner has been, you know, negotiating with his profits, he could have gone off the deep end. Quite rightly. He could have had him thrown in jail. He could have had him whipped. He could have just, any myriad of ways could have responded to how he had behaved. But he doesn't. So often in the Bible, man is the baddie. Camels and needles come to mind. But in this situation, he isn't. In this situation, he shows grace. He shows compassion. He shows forgiveness. He recognises why the manager has done what he does and commends him for his shrewdness. It's for this love and compassion and grace, that for me makes this one of my favourite parables. Because it's not neat and tidy. It's not all wrapped up. It shows the messiness of life and shows God right there. And yet even when we see this act of grace, the focus, guided by human hand, is on the actions of the manager, not the owner. Why is it that the parable is called the shrewd manager or the dishonest manager? Why isn't it called the gracious owner? Why isn't it called the gracious master? Why isn't it called the compassionate rich man? It's through human hands, when the Bible was put together, that the headings were done. God didn't put the headings in. We did. It was humans that decided to focus on the dishonesty rather than the grace. Why is it, as humans, we feel the need to point out sin? Why is it that we feel that we should make it so someone does something else? As far as I'm concerned, you're doing something wrong and I'm going to make sure you know. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't speak out against injustice. Absolutely. If there is a power imbalance that is resulting in people being abused, as a human, you should call that out. As a Christian, if you are following in the footsteps of Christ, you should definitely be calling it out. But that's another sermon. I'll get off that hobby horse right now. Why is it, as humans, we feel the need to ensure that others get punished appropriately? Well, at least as appropriately as we feel they should be punished. Why is it that if they aren't, we feel they've gotten off scot-free? It's almost as if we don't trust God to judge appropriately. It's almost as if we don't feel we can quite leave it up to God to deal with it. So we need to step in and ensure it happens. Where is the grace and the forgiveness in that? For me, it's the forgiveness that is offered in this. It is the act of grace in this that shows the true love of God. It would be interesting to know who it is that finds this parable the most difficult. My guess is probably middle-class white adults that have been able to live life in such a way that on the outside, at least, it looks like they've got it together. On the outside, at least, it appears like they haven't ever had to deal creatively with complex situations. Certainly, all the commentators that write on this passage that are middle class, possibly upper class, middle-aged, white men, all find it difficult. Life isn't straightforward. There are many people who would not find this passage difficult. They would find it relatable because their lives aren't straightforward. Because their lives are complex. That in this parable, they find hope. They find a God who stays next to them. They find a God who does not wait to the end. This parable shows God in the middle. As a caseworker, I come into contact with people that make a living, let's say, in creative ways. There are people who struggle with homelessness. There are people who have never seen what a healthy dynamic is as far as relationships go. They've grown up in homes where there is no role models as far as having healthy relationships with each other. There are people with complex mental health issues. There are people whose lives have been deeply scarred by violence. They have lives that are not the Disney life. They have lives that are difficult. They have lives that are complex. Dave, my husband, and I are also involved with God Squad. a ministry to outlaw bikers. In our involvement in that, we also come into contact with people who have had incredibly hard lives, and some of them continue to lead very hard lives, not by choice, but by the circumstances that they find themselves in. People who have had to make decisions similar to the ones that are explained in this parable. As a result, many of the people that I and we come into contact with struggle fitting into polite society, and as a result don't really want to, because they've tried. At points in time they've tried, and it just doesn't work. A parable like this provides assurance for them in ways that the prodigal son can never. It provides assurance and hope because grace and forgiveness and compassion and hope are there in the midst of the brokenness, in the midst of life decisions, in the midst of broken relationships, in the midst of pain, in the midst of suffering, there is hope. Grace is shown before compassion, not once everything is sorted. And yet so often we find it difficult to show that same level of grace and compassion that we have received from God. Can I grab a glass of water? Is that possible? Why is it that our human instinct is not to focus on the act of forgiveness or the act of grace? The way that the manager acted makes us uncomfortable, but it wasn't dishonest. At no point did he hide it from his boss. He's actually quite honest about what he's done and waits for the consequences, on top of the consequences he's already had in being fired. And they don't come. The final verses in this passage talk about those of us in the world being in a better position to relate to each other than those in the light. We are encouraged to be shrewd or wise in how we handle our finances. We are encouraged to use our finances to make friends, and not just with those that you find in polite society. We are encouraged to use, thank you. We are encouraged to use our finances to show hospitality, to show compassion. I don't think we're being asked to act like the manager. I don't think the Bible is actually calling us to rip off our bosses, just to make that very clear. I'm not suggesting you go out and act immorally or illegally. Don't do that in the coming week and say, but Emma said, this is how I meant to act as Christians. I am not saying that. What I am saying is that we are encouraged to be deliberate in how we use our resources to impact those around us. In real life, there are decisions that we have to make that are hard. There are decisions that we will have to make where there isn't an obvious right or wrong answer. There isn't always a happy ending. Things can be left unfinished. Things can happen in such a way where you're doing the best in a bad situation, but it's not what you would like to have done. At the beginning of this sermon, I asked the question, where is God in the situation that we saw? Where is God in the domestic violence that we saw? The answer is right in the middle. The answer is not on the edges. The answer is not waiting for a break. God is in the middle of that situation. God is in the middle grieving for the pain that is being inflicted on the wife. God is in the middle grieving the pain of the experiences that the husband has had growing up. God is in the middle grieving for the environment that those children are growing up in. God is in the middle grieving for the broken relationships. God isn't on the outskirts. God isn't choosing sides. God isn't supporting the wife and neglecting the husband. We are all, each one of us, made in the image of God, called and loved by God. And that is not reliant on who you are or how you act or what you've done or what you are doing even. You are called and loved by God in the middle of that situation. God is there holding out a hand. God is there with you. God is offering grace and forgiveness and love, compassion and kindness in the middle of that. If you are in a circumstances in your life at the moment that you are struggling with, God is there. You are not alone. God is not waiting for your life to get easier to step in. God is there with you and has been the entire time. God isn't waiting for it to become better to respond. You don't need to either. God is there. Transformation happens when compassion, love, grace and hope are offered in the midst of the mess. God is in the middle of the mess. Are we prepared to do the same? Are we prepared to offer grace and hope, unconditional love and compassion to those in society that are struggling? Are we prepared to love without judgment, to help without benefit or gain, to offer grace because we have been offered grace? To offer love because we are loved. If God is in the middle, if Christ is in the middle, and we are followers of Christ, why aren't we in the middle? Let's pray. Lord, life sometimes can be too complex. Life can sometimes be so hard that we struggle. We struggle to see an end. We struggle to see hope. Lord, in those moments, I ask that you reveal yourselves to us, that you poke us and prod us so we know you are still there. And even if we don't feel you there, that we know. Lord, give each one of us the strength, the wisdom, the compassion, the grace, and the love to step out of our comfort zones, to help those who are in need of help, to help those who are struggling, to help those who are in crisis, because we are loved. Amen.